Welcome to another episode of No Thanks But Yes, chill conversations with splendid people. This podcast features the many faces, voices, and pathways of recovery from problematic relationships with substances and behaviors. What have we got it going now? Hey, thanks for coming. I appreciate you.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Oh, me too. Let's see where this goes. Yeah. So welcome to No Thanks But Yes. Thanks for saying yes. I discovered you on scrolling through Instagram as one does. And I'm like, oh my, who is this fellow? I gotta check him out. This looks brilliant. And I continue to follow you and finally got bold enough to reach out and say, wanna sit down and have a chill conversation.
Fantastic. I'm happy that people are watching my stuff. Sometimes you do feel a little bit like you're screaming into the void, and sometimes it's nice to have a reaction back.
It's good medicine. I feel that way sometimes too. Well, you're not. I'm telling you what. So, all right. On No Thanks But Yes, we introduce ourselves. So tell us who the heck you are.
My name is Ralph. Pronouns he, him. I am a Danish Viking. I say Viking in a lot of my profile names. That's outside this, but I run an Instagram account, YouTube channel called Real Clear Fetish, which is sober kink. Not that you don't have a kink that's sober, but you play sober, or you do fetish sober, or just an alternative to where a lot of fetish events congregate at bars and parties and so on. And there's sometimes a lack of spaces for sober folk or people who just don't drink. There are actually people who just choose not to drink because it's not good for them. And I've been doing that since I started on Facebook as a sober group, because I'm a recovering addict. I'm 6.5 years sober. And that's from everything. I think the heaviest I do is a Viagra once in a while and a Red Bull. That's the heaviest I go. So it's, and the idea for the Facebook groups came from the fact that I kept getting told I had to give up my fetish life because it was so intertwined with sex. And I'm very stubborn and I don't like being told what I can do and cannot do. So I set that up. So a little bit, it was actually almost a little bit selfish because I wanted to create my own way back in, but in turn, I'm also helping other people. And then, of course, like everyone else, COVID happened, and I started doing a podcast talking about kink and sober life. And I have varying guests of either people in recovery or people who just don't drink, people in very early recovery. I've had teachers and coaches and stuff like that on my podcast as well.
I love it. I love the diversity of your guests. I too try to reach a diverse representation of relationships with substances. And that seems to be what you're describing, from individuals who may have had a problematic relationship or a pathological relationship, or for those who are seeking a healthier lifestyle or just choose not to, and also want to play in spaces where substances aren't centered. I was drawn, when I discovered the Facebook group, I said, isn't this a lovely thing? Isn't this lovely? Because in my work, I'm a social worker who consults in rural communities around the country, providing support for childhood prevention of substance use, harm reduction outreach for people who use substances, and people engaged in sex and sex work, access to treatment and recovery support services. And I found myself offering a lot of support to minimize harms related with substance use, with chemsex, et cetera. But I had never found a pro-social space for folks to come together, and enjoy the pleasures of that intimacy and play, in a substance-free space. And I was like, wow, here you are. You went and did that. That's what's up.
Yeah, it's I think the only thing I've seen besides my space is IML in Chicago has IML Recovery, but that is more founded in 12-step, which is perfectly fine. Where my group's approach is much more very free-spirited on what recovery is. If you want to stop hard drugs like crystal meth and so on, but you still want to drink, I'm not going to judge you on that. That is your journey and your path of recovery. I've done 12-step, and to be honest, it never really fit with me. It gave me stability in the early days, absolutely, and I am eternally grateful for the help and the love that I got from those meetings. I've just grown and moved on from that. And it's very important for me that the group kind of embodies that all types of recovery is welcome. That being, of course, the promotion is when you play, don't do drugs or heavy alcohol use. That is kind of the promotion of the group. What you do outside that, not really any of my business. Of course, if you do something that's destructive, then of course I'll try to help as much as possible, because even like chemsex, drug use happens outside chemsex as well. So it's everyone has their own story, their own path. And if I can just be a smidgen of a help pointing in the right direction that works for the individual, perfect.
Oh, I love how you've expressed that. And I too had my cultural foundations within 12-step communities of recovery. I'm deeply grateful for their ubiquitous presence in many communities and ease of access and support and what have you, but also found myself growing in a different direction. Always felt a little bit like I didn't completely identify with this community. And then as we began discovering more broad and ecumenical cultures of recovery that meet people, where they are and walk hand in hand on many pathways, I got super excited about that and ran headlong into that social structure of inclusion. But there's many subcultures within the broad culture of recovery, and so that's what I see it as. 12-step is a subculture, and there's many, many more. And so cool. We segued into recovery and concepts of recovery. What does recovery mean to you?
It's a very big subject, really, but recovery is ongoing. It's something that keeps happening, and I have good days, I have bad days. I have not necessarily physical relapses, but maybe mental relapses once in a while, and I'm quite honest about that. I think one of the things a lot of people, at least in early recovery, think there's a fix. Yes, you get better. You get better at managing things as you go on. But it's not longer than last year. I had 3 weeks of constant using thoughts, and I was quite scared. Where I was on a waiting list for some therapy, and it was just taking too long. And my mental health wasn't great. So I literally just called the doctor. Either you're going to put me on something for my anxiety, or I will relapse. I will self-medicate. And I have the power now to see where my thinking goes and also be quite honest and open about it. And that is bloody tough, especially like it was just around my 6-year anniversary date, and my birthdays always does a head turn for me, like around my recovery birthdays. It's for some reason it does. Marking days, I'm sure most recovering addicts has days or dates that can be triggering. For some reason, my birthday can be quite. But what happened last year was I had a medical procedure where I had sedation whilst I had the procedure. So I was lucid, but for the first time in 3 months, my brain was quiet. Because I have ADHD. I was diagnosed a year and a half ago, so quite late. And the first week I was fine, but then the week after, I was just like, my brain, oh, I know how to fix this. I know how to get away from this bloody brain that won't fucking shut up.
Yes.
Sorry, can I swear, by the way? Am I okay to swear?
Fuck yeah.
Okay, great. I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure.
Thanks for asking.
Yeah. Well, I don't mind swearing on my podcast, but then again, we also talk about fucking and fisting and all sorts of stuff. So,
Right.
I just got to a point where my brain just was tricking me and thinking it won't be so bad and I can do this again. And this is even after 6 years. And it's you're not further away from a relapse than turning around. And that is one of the things I've definitely taken away from like 12-step groups is that you're not further away than you just turning around and using. And you can have as many years as you want. And you have to be so fucking honest about it. And I am, and it's scary. And sometimes I feel like a fraud because I still get these thoughts because doing the podcast and the group and so on, you put your little set yourself a little bit on a pedestal, like this is the standard. But then in the background, I'm messy, and I'm not mentally coping, and I feel like a fraud and imposter syndrome and all this.
Get out of my head, Ralph.
but it's one of those things where everyone comes up to me and. And I love people coming up and talking to me and admiring what I do, but I'm also horrible at taking compliments and actually quite shy. But when I'm on, I don't project that. For example, like I'm talking to you, I put on my podcast voice, if I can call it that. But in generally, if I'm in a bar, I'm a shoegazer. I look at my shoes quite a lot, or I people watch. So
Yeah.
yeah.
You and I tell you, I one of the lovely things about speaking to someone else on a recovery journey in a spirit of authenticity and vulnerability like this is an opportunity to see how similar we are in our internal and external journeys like that. Yeah, I'm feeling a strong connection with your inside experience with self throughout this recovery journey. And I'm gratified though that I do have spaces and relationships now in recovery where I can share those things, where previously I felt as though I was in spaces and relationships where I was afraid to share how unwell I was at any given time. Not that I had relapsed or whatever, but just how messy I was or how literally unwell I was. And so I've found people. One of my favorite mutual aid spaces now is called Harm Reduction Works, HRW. And it's a lovely place where people are on journeys. But we are very free to speak about anything without judgment. And it creates a kinship in these multiple pathways recovery journeys. So thank you for sharing about recovery, what recovery means. I liked it. It certainly wasn't a soundbite, which is good. Man, let's let it roll out. And I think more folks are going to identify with that than with an idealistic soundbite for sure, which I always had trouble resonating with. Right on. Well, tell me a little bit more about what you're doing or what's coming up for you.
Besides doing Real Clear Fetish, which is my group, in my private life, I Work full time. I literally walked in the door when I locked on to Zoom with you. I work for local government, so that kind of just pays my bills. I wouldn't say I'm unpassionate about my job, but it's a way forward with everything else. And what I do outside work is what I'm passionate about. I sing with the London Gay Men's Chorus, Europe's biggest boy band, as we announced as being. But we are approximately 200 singing members, so we are huge.
I saw that on your bio, and I took delight in that. I enjoyed the choir in the Christmas special recently. I'm drawing a blank on her name, from Ted Lasso.
Oh yeah, Hannah Waddingham. Yeah.
Oh God, yeah, that was wonderful.
She's amazing. She's one of our patrons. She's always supported us, no matter how big she gets. As soon as she knew she was doing the Christmas show, she was like, "You're doing it with me, aren't you?" And it was, it's a long day recording that, but it, you know what? It was such a delight. It was very weird doing Christmas in May time because it was very warm outside. And it's like an 8-hour day, but the staff at Apple that did the recording, or the recording people, were so friendly and so kind. And it was just a really lovely day. And she's just a delight. It's like, if you see interviews with her, that is how she is. That is not something that's put on. She is just really, she knows what she wants, but she's very down to earth.
Fierce.
And very gay friendly.
Oh, lovely. Lovely. Yeah. That was a joy. That was absolute joy. And she's wonderful. Glad to hear in real life, she's wonderful too.
Oh, she absolutely is. She's hosted a couple of our shows as well. So she's been an absolute delight. When it comes to the London Gay Men's Chorus, I always kind of, they are the cornerstone of my recovery. They are. It sounds dramatic, but they've saved my life. There's no doubt in my head they have, because 2016, yet again, sitting on my friend's couch, bawling my eyes out, going, "I don't want to do this anymore. Why do I keep doing this?" This is before I kind of acknowledged I was an addict. And my friend Dan was just like, "Well, why don't you come and sing with me and the boys?" And I'd never heard of them. And I've been in London for maybe like 7 years at that point. And I've never heard of them, which is so weird, because I've always done choruses. But then I moved here and drugs became more interesting than anything creative. And I joined them. It didn't necessarily stop me using, it has to be said.
Yeah.
It's very tough. It was very tough going to rehearsals on a Monday when you've been on a bender for 3 days. Yeah. But I did it. But in that chorus, I met my first person who I know who was in recovery. I saw him do, they did a sub chorus in the chorus called the Shame Chorus, where they wrote these songs about mental health, addiction, and all this. They had therapists do interviews and then write songs from that. And I went on my birthday back in, yeah, it must have been 2017. And then I went on a 4-day bender afterwards. But I'd seen my friend in the chorus kind of go, "I'm in recovery, I'm 2 years sober." And I had my first drug psychosis and I was a mess. It was also the way my family found out. And because I knew he was in recovery, I texted him and kind of go, "I need help. You said this at this concert." And he took me to my first NA meeting and my first CMA meeting. And it kind of just trickled from there. Oh. So if I hadn't been in the chorus, I'd probably be dead by now, to be honest.
Yes. Yes, many, many pathways to recovery. I was hanging on every word of the story of getting engaged with the choir, and then that we call it recovery visibility, and we see that as a critical part of providing hope and providing connection for folks to make that call. I think I need help. But I think you said you were in recovery or something. So, yeah, a lot of us are really transparent about our recovery status, like you are as well. And I know I get texts and calls from time to time from lots of people, but I love how that came about. Thank you for sharing that. I'm glad we didn't miss that.
Yeah.
That is wonderful. Connection is so important too. And you got connected with the choir, a pro-social, probably substance-free space for the most part, getting down to business, rehearsing. And oh, I love it. Oh, man. Well, singing in the choir is fun. What else do you do for fun? What do you take care of
Well,
you?
I've not done it for a while, but I also do creative writing. But it's I kind of call my poetry my survival poetry. It's when my brain boils over. If I have something to say, I'll write something out, and that would normally alleviate some of the stress. I always kind of like it's like, oh, can I read some of what stuff you've written? It's like, yeah, read it, but I'm not suicidal. It sounds dark, but this was just a snapshot of where my brain was in that moment. I'm not going to jump into traffic. But I haven't written anything for a while, but that's normally a good sign. That's normally a good sign that I'm in a good place.
I'm seeing that as a release valve for your ADHD and your oars run deep. And I can relate to the if someone gets a peek at something I've written or an image that I've created using different tools, so I'll get that. Are you okay, man?
Yeah,
Man, fine.
even I sometimes reread some of my poems and I just go, geez, what was going on there? But it's also like sometimes we have dark and we have light sides, and I think coming into recovery and being sober and realizing through TikTok actually that I am on the spectrum, I'm neurodivergent, not diagnosed on that side yet, but ADHD is diagnosed, and I figured that out through TikTok because there's such a big community on there for
Awesome.
neurospicy people, as they call themselves,
Neurospicy
and
are people.
yeah, our people, and I realized that during coming into recovery, and in the last 2, 3 years, I've explored my brain and figure out what ticks and why am I doing these things. I'm still on a waiting list for not Asperger's, we don't call it that anymore.
Right. Yeah. Mild autism spectrum
Oh,
disorder.
yeah, the mild autism. There's a long waiting list on that
Yeah.
here in the
Yeah.
UK. But I have an ADHD diagnosis, and it's just I've had ADHD coaching now, and that was mind-blowing to me. I wouldn't say it has changed my life. I've had ADHD since I was a kid. So it's more understanding what my brain does,
Yes.
where I'm working at stress factors, because a lot of ADHD people, we work in adrenaline-driven mindset constantly. And this is why we collapse and get depressed all of a sudden. And I one of the sessions, she mentioned, I can't remember the name right now, but she mentioned a name about what happens when you go from in adrenaline driven into standby mode. And I was just like, I just thought that was me. There's so many people, you put a name to it.
Yeah.
And I was so relieved. I was just like, oh my God, that's been happening all my adult life, probably as a kid as well, but I didn't know how to formulate a sentence around it.
It's helpful. It's helpful
It
having
is.
that explained and having that connection with other people. Because prior to that, I was always just like, what the fuck is wrong with me? Why am I unable to initiate this task? This critical task. Why am I waiting until the last minute? Oh, you're just lazy and stupid and stuff like that. And then, like, wow, how did I create this brilliant thing or go through this pile of, how did I slay that dragon? Yeah, very helpful. It helps to
Yeah,
take away some of the shame too.
it is, and all of a sudden realizing that the alcohol and the drug taking and feeling insecure in a bar, because I've always been a wallflower. I've always been hard struck by going up and talking to strangers. And I remember in my 20s when I lived in Copenhagen, my friend Thomas is like, why don't you just go over and talk to them? Making it sound like the easiest fucking thing in the world. And realizing, oh, it's because I'm not like everyone else. But I'm not unique either, which is also a relief.
Yes.
The weird thing, though, yeah, the weird thing getting the diagnosis is I'm not masking nearly as much. So some of the symptoms have actually got a little bit worse in the last year. COVID didn't help by sitting at home all the time. So all of a sudden bars were very much a challenge, and I've slowly getting to a point where I can mask a little bit better when I'm in a bar.
Yep.
But sometimes I just have to go home. It doesn't work.
Mm.
Oh, but having the freedom to do that and not forcing myself to stay is just a relief in itself.
Recovery has been a process of your gleaning so much insight into who you are and what's inside of you. And I love it. I feel the same way. And I think it helps us more deeply connect with folks too, because I'm feeling much lifted from this conversation here, because I don't get a lot of opportunities I have a lot of guests, but we're all very, very different, but I'm feeling particularly aligned with your human experience right now. So
oh, thank you.
I appreciate that, brother. Appreciate that. Well, I'll tell you what. Oh, one other thing. My family comes from Denmark as well. So, yeah, probably fourth generation Danish immigrants on my mother's side. Yeah.
Oh, fabulous.
They were children.
We might be distant cousins. You never know.
We might be.
It's not a big country, after all. It's very, very small. There's only 5.5 million, so it's a very small country.
Wow. Yeah. There's a million people in my county alone. Yeah.
Well, living in a city has a population that's bigger than my home country is quite something. You will never run into the same person. And it's also because it's such a... London has definitely changed me. I've experienced so much here. I would also say my political views or sensibilities or my wokeness has changed slightly by living here, where sometimes when I look from the outside and in at my little country, I sometimes like, you need to keep up with the rest of the world and not be so stuck in your own sandbox. I love my country and I'm very proud of being Danish, but sometimes it's like, why are we still discussing this? This is horribly racist. This is horribly homophobic. And you're still discussing it after 30 years. Yep. But then again, I have to remember Denmark didn't become multicultural before the 90s. So we were very white up until the 90s. And where the UK become multicultural in maybe like the 50s. So they are a lot further forward. And the UK has lots of problems as well.
Indeed.
So sometimes I have to be a little bit more forgiving, I think, when it comes to my country.
Yeah. Meet your people where they are. They're growing up in public.
I've been educating my mom for the last couple of years. She has not a racist bone in her body, but sometimes things come out of her mouth where I'm just like, mom, you can't say that. It doesn't come from a place of malice. It just comes from sometimes a place of ignorance or lack of knowledge. And I'm happy to educate. So
absolutely. Yeah, same here. Oh, well, this has been great. We always end no thanks but yes with a final message. Do you have anything to say to our millions and millions of listeners?
It's like, take it slow if you're coming into recovery. For me, when I came into recovery, because it was based in chemsex, all of a sudden, I was like, you couldn't do sex, you couldn't do fetish, you couldn't do lever, because it was all a trigger. You can get it all back. It just takes a lot of time. And you have to be patient with it. For me, it took 2 years before I kind of started re-engaging with all my kink and so on. And it will be different. It won't be the same. It can never be the same. And that's why it is so bloody addictive, because it is, you're running up here. I'm doing a hand gesture on a
yeah.
you're running very high. But you can experience highs in so many natural ways. And wearing my fetish gear or connecting with a boy or a daddy or whatever is such much more of a bigger high for me nowadays. But also tread carefully, because the kink scene is full of drugs. And sometimes you're not in a good headspace, so don't put yourself in that space.
Mm.
So always have an exit plan. If you're having a horrible time, even if you pay $100 or £50 for a ticket, you can still go home. It's just money. It's go and have fun and have a safety net when it comes to kink and doing things sober.
Oh, I you know what? I think that's a universal message for everyone modifying their relationship to substances that may have been entangled with other behaviors. For me, it was a musician, and I had to give up gigging for a while, and then I got back to it, and some real clear gigging, and sometimes I needed an exit plan. But the message was, you can get it all back. I love it.
And I've gotten so much more back than I had before.
More.
Because one of the things I didn't have when I was using was creativity. That went all out the window. I didn't sing. I didn't write. I do video editing as well as a hobby. So all that went away. I didn't do that for 9 years. And then I had to quickly grow up a bit, because I didn't grow up in my 20s and my early 30s because I was using drugs. Yep. So you stent your development, really. So I had to quickly kick myself in the ass to kind of learn to be an adult again. Because I was just a big child in the start of my 30s. And I didn't quite know how to be in my own skin.
Dude, same. I got into recovery in my 30s. I'm now in my 50s. So I feel all grown up now. But I had a lot of growing up to do. And now in recovery, rediscovering. Mm-hmm. Fun and connection. I love it. Oh, that's a hopeful message. I appreciate it so much. And I hope to connect with you again somewhere sometime soon.
I hope so too. It's been amazing. Thank you very much for having me.
Right on. Thanks for listening to another amazing episode. No Thanks But Yes is non-monetized and unaffiliated. Available everywhere you stream excellent podcasts. Remember to subscribe today and tell all your friends about it.